Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2015 film Terminator Genisys, the last of our Terminator movies for a while. And I don't know about you guys, but I am happy it's over.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad to be done for at least a year or so.
Yeah, I'm ready.
It was a fun trip, but I'm a little burnt by now.
Yeah, I'm ready for a different movie.
Yeah. Maybe a cartoon, an animated feature, if you will.
One that perhaps you hate.
Maybe one of the best animated features of all time.
All right, I can't wait.
We'll see, won't we? Let's just get to it. We may have housekeeping at the end, but shall we just dive into Terminator?
Sure, we can start. I think I texted both of you that I got through the movie and took officially zero notes.
Yes, I am fascinated by this development. How did this happen?
I was watching it and there was nothing of note that I thought, it was just so meh that I was like, well, this will be... No. Well, this will be... No. Well, I could... No. So, basically, but in the movie, I was just like, meh. We'll discuss it, but there's nothing worth writing down.
I didn't feel that way at all. In fact, I put first thoughts as that although it may actually be Stockholm Syndrome at this point, but... But I like this movie. I thought it honored the original material. It had a wink and a nudge, and it was just kind of fun.
It was certainly better than the last movie. It was certainly better than Salvation.
Yes.
Yeah, I like this quite a bit better than Salvation, and I think I give it a lot of credit for what it tried to do and maybe didn't pull off. I thought Arnold was great in this movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But
I think everybody was great in this movie.
Oh, I don't think everybody was great in this movie.
Well, all right. We
particularly whoever was in charge of writing dialogue.
Well, that's the thing. This was poorly written and it was very mishmash, but also greatly because the plan is that Paramount wanted three of them.
Oh, yeah, in a quick succession because James Cameron gets the rights back in 2019.
Yeah, and so they want three movies. So, and judging from the money, it's happening.
Oh, and why not? I mean, you know, it's a rich universe.
Yeah, I don't know. I could take it or leave it for a while now.
Yeah, no, me too. I could definitely take it or leave it. But
yeah, but I mean, this was budgeted for $155 million. It grossed $440.
Well, it wasn't as big as they thought it was going to be, partly because they thought that Jurassic World was going to tank. And they also weren't prepared for how popular Inside Out was.
Yeah, it was plagued by a bad release.
And they gave away the twists in the commercials.
Yeah, which is lame. Like, yeah, so shall we just start? Well, Drew, I think this is still your fault, right? To be a completionist,
yes.
So this gets
yes.
So what did you think?
There was a lot of stuff I liked about it. There's some stuff I didn't. I really liked how I think you've already said this, but how reverential it was to the first two movies, but in a very creative way to still make it fresh and interesting. So there's good stuff here. I didn't like Kyle Reese, though, and that, I think, was the biggest misfire of the movie. I really like intense Michael Biehn Kyle Reese. I don't like quippy John McClane wannabe Kyle Reese. I just it doesn't play for me.
Yeah, no, that's an apt description. The quippiness was starting to wear thin for me.
The Reese brothers aren't quippy. They are intense and brooding.
Yes.
And that's how I want them to be. I mean, there is some dumb stuff. I think the conceit of being able to travel forward in time is a bad idea for this universe. I think it adds too many options. But at the same time, I think they took advantage of that as much as they could.
Well, I've got a problem with that, because if they leap forward in time, then the birth of John doesn't happen at the same time.
Oh, it's mixing all the time streams, which is kind of a problem in time travel movies, but they just didn't really talk about it too much.
No, they didn't talk about it at all, except to have Arnold explain it like, oh, it just happens.
They create an artificial sense of urgency. I presume they can travel forward to any time they want. And for some reason, they're like, we're going to go to the day Skynet is created.
Yeah, well, it's the T3 urgency, where all of a sudden you're across a desert from where you need to be in 3 hours.
Yeah, which is great for like adding tension and adding like a chase element, but it doesn't make any sense. Why not give yourself a little bit more time to do stuff?
That's a good point. Exactly. Yeah, if you have the technology to go forward, why not give yourself like a month or two?
Or why not nip it in the bud back in 1984, like they wanted to?
And, you know, maybe there was an explanation that got cut out of the movie. You know, it could have been as simple as saying they're going to keep sending Terminators back to get us, and eventually they will succeed, so we need to jump forward, you know, and take out Skynet closer to its inception. Like, a simple little explanation like that, I think, would have made a big difference.
Agreed.
But with all that being said, there was some fun stuff in this movie. You know, J. Jonah Jameson was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
I liked him. But, yeah, I mean, I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad I have now completed the series. It's certainly not my favorite, but it's not the worst.
No, right. Not at all. With that. So yeah,
how's that for a ringing endorsement?
Yeah, exactly. No, I thought it was a perfectly acceptable action flick in the way that I don't think Salvation was at all. I think this had some really nice action set pieces. It had, like I said, it had lots of nods and winks at the original story.
Well, including a, you know, almost shot for shot remake of two of major scenes at the beginning.
Yeah, which is fantastic. I like the way they did that.
Mm-hmm. I did too.
So, yeah. So, shall we just start out and go through the plot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So, it's the year 2029, and John Connor, played by Jason Clarke, who up until early this morning, I thought was played by Joel Edgerton. Like, literally.
Jason Clarke of Zero Dark Thirty fame.
Yeah, yeah.
He has my favorite line in that movie.
It's a tautology.
I kept thinking he was the dude from Alias.
I haven't seen Alias.
Yeah, I haven't seen it as far as I know.
Okay.
Sorry.
I wish our audience could have just seen the epic eye roll. That was great.
So, now, do you know who was the first choice to play John Connor for this movie? Okay, that's not true. I think probably Christian Bale was the first choice, but who was the
Christian
second
Bale
choice?
Was the first choice.
Yeah, but who was the second choice to play John Connor?
Tom Hardy?
Yes.
Oh, he would have eaten up Jai Courtney as Kyle Reese and just spit him out.
Yeah, exactly.
So, John Connor, again, Jason Clarke, is the leader of the Resistance in 2029, and they're launching their final offensive on Los Angeles to take down Skynet once and for all. And he's notified by his TechCom unit that Skynet will attack on two fronts in the past and the future, therefore changing warfare forever. So he sets up two attack forces, one to strike at Skynet's main defense grid in Colorado, and the other one led by John and his trusted lieutenant Kyle Reese, played by Jai Courtney, of Divergent, Insurgent, Jack Reacher, and A Good Day to Die Hard, to destroy Skynet's main weapon, a time machine hidden at a remote storage facility. Before the Resistance can reach the time machine, Skynet sends a T-800 Terminator back in time to 1984 to kill John's mother, Sarah Connor. So Reese volunteers to go back in time in order to protect her and ensure John's existence. But moments before Kyle disappears, he witnesses a cyborg posing as a resistance soldier. And that cyborg is played by...
Matt Smith.
Of...
Doctor Who.
Yes, he was the Doctor. I can't remember what number Doctor he was, but he was one of the Doctors. Anyway, he attacks eight. John. He was eight?
I made that one up.
Say, I think it's more than eight, actually. I think it's more like 11 or 12, but...
I don't know. I've never seen it.
I just texted both of you a picture of Victor Garber from Alias.
Okay, so you thought John Connor was Victor Garber?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
It took me a while because I kept... I hadn't seen Victor Garber recently enough, and then I couldn't quite place this guy because I'm like, I've seen him before, but I couldn't, you know, just there was a familiarity.
Yeah. Well, Jason Clarke has a weird head.
He has a weird face. He had weird facial expressions too.
Yeah. So.
Didn't actually like him all that much.
Me either. Yeah. I think it was my least favorite part of this movie.
Well, good thing he was the villain.
Yeah. As we found out from the ad.
Right. See, I never saw the ad, so I never got spoiled.
Oh, no, me either. Yes, I was fine. So as Reese floats in the machine's magnetic field that takes him back in time, he's getting all these weird fragments, memory fragments, including what turned out to be an alternate 12-year-old version of himself with a young Sarah and a cryptic warning about events that'll happen in 2017.
The Sega Genesis will kill you.
Yes, indeed. So both Reese and the original T-800 arrive in 1984 Los Angeles, and it's just like a shot-for-shot remake up into a point of the original T-800.
And I thought the original T-800 looked great. I thought the special effects to make the young Arnold looked really good. You know, there was a little bit of Uncanny Valley stuff in his face, but... Like, not nearly as bad as, like, young Jeff Bridges in the Tron sequel.
They had a huge casting call to try and find the right actor to fulfill the role. They found a guy with the same measurement and shoulders of when Schwarzenegger originally filmed.
Yeah, no, I thought those effects were fantastic.
Oh, yeah. And it's really effective because it just takes you right back to the original film where he's going up to Bill Paxton. Instead, it's the... And he gets right there where he says, give me your clothes, and talks about wash day. And then we see that the sniper. And we have two Terminators. We have the old Arnold and the young Arnold.
And they recreated this park completely. They absolutely reconstructed it in their little area when they were filming in Louisiana.
Oh, we reconstructed Griffith Park?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's hilarious.
They rebuilt it entirely.
Cool. Well, I mean, it's just, like I said, it's just pretty great. And there's a little brawl, and then just about the younger one's just about to take out the older one, and a sniper from a rooftop shoots at it. In the meantime, Kyle Reese materializes in the back alley, and he steals a pair of pants from a homeless man. And then a police car arrives, and its officer chases Reese into an alleyway. Reese ends up cornering the officer, taking his revolver and demanding to know the date and the year, just like the first film. But then the cop, by the way, did you recognize the cop?
I thought the cop really looked like an Asian version of Robert Patrick.
A little bit. Yeah, I think it was a good job, but I didn't recognize it. But I found out in the notes that the cop was played by an actor named Byung-Jun Lee, or Lee Byung-Jun, depending on where you see it. And he played the director in the segment cut from Three Extremes.
Oh. Wow. I guess Korean dudes don't age. He looks great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And so we find out that this police officer is really a T-1000. So shit is going strange from the very beginning. And now we have Kyle Reese running from a T-1000 into the department store to get his sneakers. By the way, did you know the history of the sneakers for this movie?
No, they just weren't the same. I assume they were the same as the original movie.
Well, yes, but they actually ended up making some sort of deal negotiation with Nike to produce, like do a short run of 25 reproduction sneakers because they wanted Nike would have done a whole line of sneakers built on the, I don't know, like one of their shoe platforms that existed in, you know, 2015. But there's so many shoe connoisseurs out there that would know the difference that they had to, the director basically pushed for it, said it was his finest moment.
They wanted truly period reproduction shoes.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. If they couldn't get 25 pairs of original shoes, which would probably be very, very expensive.
Because having Nike reproduce them, it wouldn't be?
Probably cheaper than buying them. Because there's the classic shoe market, sneaker market, is actually amazing.
There's like some shoe underground.
Was it Biz Marquee that's got a room of sneakers? Or who is it that has a... In Cribs, there's a Rapist that has a room of sneakers.
Why would you assume either of us would know that?
A Leaky Boom Boom Down? Come on, you guys know everything. A Leaky Boom Boom
Down. You did know that song, right?
When you heard it? Of course I did. And I can't get it out of my head, so fuck you both.
But you're the one who kept dropping it in. Don't even start with us.
And then when I saw the In Living Jim Color Carrey version... Yeah.
Imposter.
Yeah, pretty amazing. And then I had to read the history of snow.
Oh, God, why?
Oh, to find out.
Does he have an interesting history?
Not particularly.
He's Canadian, right?
Yeah, he grew up in the streets of Toronto, and there was a massive, like Jamaican and Dominican.
Through the Great Poutine Famine of 1988.
Well, no, it was like there's a lot of immigrants. Which is a controversial thing at the time. But he ended up making friends with this neighbors next to him named the Browns. I guess in the Ellis Island of Canada, they were kind of on the nose. And and so he grew up and they called him Snow or Snow White because he was so white and he loved the reggae. And he ended up being, they mocked him, much like in Living Color, about being like a big poser. And people thought that only Jamaicans could sing reggae. And then he had some pretty big fans who said, you know, who were like, no, come on. He's the real deal. Leave him alone. He's doing fine. And one of his big fans is Drew Carey, who had him do a reggae version of the theme song for that Drew Carey Cleveland show.
I am so astonished about what a deep dive you went into snow.
I had to look up the lyrics and figure out what they mean.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can send you the CD. I still own it.
You have 12 inches of snow?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, because at the time it came out, I believe I was working in records and tapes.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so it was catchy. And so if it was catchy and popular, I'm like, I kind of like this. And then, of course, after I'd heard it 1,000 times, I think it got retired out of my collection and sits in, you know, quietly on a shelf downstairs in my basement.
Oh, I can't get it out of my head. I can't. It's just driving me crazy.
There's tons of more brain worms I have, so...
Okay, well, let's just leave them alone for a bit.
Happy to share.
Yeah, okay, well, anyway.
You know what the best one is? It's the Smurfs. La, 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 sing a happy song. La, 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 smurf the whole day long.
Let your smile begin. Happy things will come to you.
Then smurf yourself a grin.
Ooh, I hate Smurfs. I'll get you. I'll get all of you if it's the last thing I ever do.
Yeah, I don't know. They say that to get a brain worm unhooked from your brain, you know what you're saying to yourself?
Con.
No, no. Although that's a good pull. No, you sing the Mana Mana song. And that's supposed to dislodge any brain worm.
I would go with the Happy Tree Friends theme song.
Nah, the Smurfs. The Smurfs work the best.
You think so? And it doesn't get stuck in your head?
No, it does. It absolutely does. Try it.
Yeah, no, I don't want to exchange the things. Yeah, I never liked the Smurfs cartoon.
It's very subversive.
I don't know. No, that was the beginning of the collector toys that had no play value to them. It wasn't the beginning of it, but it was my introduction to those.
So, where you just collected them, but you would never play with them because they were more valuable someday, hopefully.
No, I didn't collect them, but other people collected them or bought them just to have them and not anything with them.
I didn't mean to imply you did. I just meant that your peers.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because I don't think any of us really collected anything like that, did we?
Well, we had like action figures and stuff, but those were all
we played with them. Did we really have anything that?
Oh no, the concept of buying something and leaving it in a box still doesn't appeal to me at all.
I mean, with the exception of Drew and all the jewel boxes, they're the long boxes.
Oh, the long boxes. Yeah.
Well, I opened those.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I mean, with that exception, I don't think any of us really collected anything with the idea of collecting it to keep it for later.
Do you have that extra long Spinal Tap box?
If the parents kept all my long boxes, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Break Like the Wind?
Yes. Well, was it Break Like the Wind or was it just the original Spinal Tap album? Because I'm thinking it must have been the original. Did long boxes survive to Break Like the Wind?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
Well, if nothing else, you should go and vacuum seal them so that the little buggies don't eat the paper, because they will be worth something.
No, but it turns out I bet you they won't.
Will they?
I mean, the art's good and everything, but still.
Yeah, I'm not as emotionally invested in them anymore. So,
can you imagine? They got rid of the long boxes because of packaging concerns, but we now have K-cups for coffee. I mean, that's a big fuck you to the environment right there.
Well, except that, but there's a multi-tier thing that happened. So first thing was it became a security issue because you couldn't secure them in the long box, and you could secure them in tiny jewel cases, because then you would just put them in those bondage cases that we had that you had to have a special key to unlock. So that was the first part. The second part was, when you're not in a long box anymore and it's just a jewel box, you can ship four times as many in a box.
Well, that's
in some
true.
Cases. So you're saving boxes, which means more space on a truck, which means you can get more on a truck, which means the truck isn't going empty, it's going full. And so you reach this economy of scale, especially when, stuff is getting barged and freighted from shore to shore. In the days of, Fred Meyer freight, it would, it come from, Seattle in some cases.
But weren't the long boxes just like a third of an LP size? Weren't they the same length as an LP, so they'd fit in the same rack?
They were the same length?
Yeah, weren't they the same height as a LP?
They were about the same height.
Yeah. You could put, I think, two or three of them, right, in the same...
You could get about two of them side by side.
Okay, anyway.
No, you could get two of them side by side in a space that fit where an album would fit.
Yeah.
But three was two. Three was too many.
Okay.
Because we had to put special dividers in when we converted from records into CDs.
Ah, okay.
So, because the cassettes stayed. The cassettes, at the store, the cassettes were around the perimeter on the wall, but the album racks were in the center, and then the album racks got inserts for CDs, and then the remainder of album racks turned into laser discs.
Ugh, good times. Physical media.
Pioneer laser discs, by the way.
Oh, of course. Anywho, so back to Terminator. we've got 1984 John Connor. No, I'm sorry, 1984 Kyle Reese. And suddenly we have two Terminators. And then we have the Terminator T-1000 is after Kyle Reese in the department store. And these two police officers, Garber and O'Brien, end up tackling Reese and handcuffing him. And as they're leading him away in handcuffs, they don't see the T-1000 emerge from a dressing mirror. A mirror is always a good thing for a Terminator T-1000 to replicate, because it's pretty cool.
It's a pretty awesome special effect.
Yeah. And, of course, the T-1000 kills Garber, but not O'Brien, the young cop O'Brien. Who?
Knives and stabbing weapons.
Yes. So he and Kyle take cover behind the counter, and just as their luck is about to run out, who comes by in an armored van? But Sarah Connor.
Before you get there, this is a moment where closed captions actually betrayed a plot point. Because when I was watching the movie, the cop was actually labeled Young O'Brien. I was like, oh.
Until I did the notes, I didn't even put the two together.
Oh, come on.
No, I just was, you know, I saw the guy from Whiplash and I thought, oh, sweet.
They actually talked about it.
Yeah.
Like, Kyle's like, oh, you're the dude from the store.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. Like I said, it did not make a big impression on me.
He'd probably stop listening to anything Kyle Reese said at that point anyway.
Yeah, probably. So anyway, so Sarah Connor shows up, and I hats off to Emilia Clarke. She did great. And she had, to me, she had that same sort of wiry, strong look about her that Linda Hamilton had in T2.
She was somewhere in between. She was a little bit softer, but she played it tough.
Yeah, well, she was younger, but but she played it really tough. I thought she pulled that off rather well.
Yeah, the dialogue they gave her was atrocious, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but she comes out and she's got the Desert Eagle, which Arnold made popular, and she gets to say the "Come with me if you want to live" line, which is always great to hear. I'm sure in the theater we were all cheering.
I just want to know where her dragons were.
So now Kyle becomes kind of our entry character in this thing, because he's confused as we are, because now we have a different whole timeline. And we have that we learned that the T-800 was sent from 2029 or later or something, had already been like sent to kill Sarah Connor when she was a small child.
Yeah, it's never explained who sent the old Arnold back to, was it 1973, right?
Yeah, yes.
Well, deliberately, remember, she makes a big point about she doesn't know who, and nobody does, so that they couldn't go back and stop them from doing it.
Okay, I missed that point.
Yeah, she makes a point, because when Kyle is interrogating her in the back of the armored car about how, you know, Pops, this is a Terminator, blah, 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 and she's like, no. And he's like, well, who sent them? And she said, well, you know, he doesn't know. It's been erased from his memory, and I don't know. And none of us know. And that way, you know, Skynet can't figure it out and then undo it.
Ah, very clever. So he is the Guardian. He is no longer a Terminator. He is a Guardian. And he's actually in the credits as the Guardian.
Yep.
But I love the fact she calls him Pops. And I love the fact that, like, in a Disney movie, how all her parents die and suddenly a robot becomes her dad.
I hated that she called him Pops.
Really?
I hated even more when Kyle Reese started calling him Pops. Every time Pops was said in the movie, I cringed.
Oh, I thought it was really cute. I really did like it.
Yeah, me too. What's wrong with your heart?
Apparently it is cold and made of stone.
Oh.
Because every time it was like a seventh grader had written, had this funny thought that would be clever for a movie that they were writing.
Well, I think the point was that she was, you know, she was still growing up.
Yeah, I mean, she had some arrested development for all her toughness, for sure.
But yeah, no, this is a situation where, you know, because there was a little subplot of like her being uncomfortable with the fact that she was supposed to mate with Kyle Reese and make John Connor. But it's pretty clear in this that neither she or Kyle apparently have had any sexual contact with anything up until this point.
Leaky Boom Boom Down.
And yeah. Arnold was great the whole time.
Yeah, I agree.
He's just great.
That was his real hair color, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's great. And, oh, I mean, what
when they were in 2017?
Yes. Plus, they use that same thing that worked really well they explored in the Sarah Connor Chronicles, where you have the Terminator that, for whatever reason, has to hang out for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Like, I like that idea. And it explains a lot of having, like, weapons caches and stuff that you can say, oh, yeah, well, he had a long time to get ready for this whole mission.
And right. Well, even to the point later on where he's, you know, I worked a construction crew until they laid me off.
Yeah, exactly, which was kind of fun. And I thought the cheesy bits, like when he's smiling, I like that.
It was good. The creepy smile was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's who the comic relief should be. Not quippy lines from Kyle Reese.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah, so then we have, you know, again, I'm going to yada yada lots of action scenes. And then here's, toward the end of this movie, we're going to get into some numbers that, again, I had problems with Terminator Salvation. Even while I was, like, putting together the plot synopsis here, I'm like, oh, I don't even care what these model numbers of these Terminators are. Like, it turns out the T-5000 turned John Connor, spoiler, into a T-3000. I don't know. Anyway. So
what? That's not in the movie.
Yeah, that's what it was in the plot synopsis. I don't know. Again, it's from IMDb, so who knows?
That is not in the movie.
Okay. So, so we end up in this little chase, and we get to an abandoned factory, which is always a familiar place for us. And the T-1000 disables the Guardian and reactivates a fallen T-800. And then the T-1000 pursues Sarah while Kyle fends off the T-800.
Poorly.
Yeah. After destroying the flesh, Kyle finally destroys the T-800 by blasting its head off. And then Sarah finds herself trapped in a chamber underneath an acid bath, which is set as a trap, which is sort of clever. And she is confronted with two Kyles. And so she solves it in the Indiana Jones method. Just taking a guess and shooting one of them in the foot, which would have meant for a great plot element if he would have had to limp around the rest of the movie.
That would have been pretty funny.
But, you know, this is a PG-13 movie, so they said a lot of shits, but he would have had to said a couple really bad words if he shot him in the foot, I think.
He might not have wanted to mate with her after that.
He would have stopped being so quippy, probably.
Exactly.
That certainly would have improved the movie then.
Straighten up and fly right, man.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's this acid bath thing where she destroys the T-1000, and the Guardian ends up coming in, and Arnold, we'll just call him Arnold now, comes in and crushes him and then does some damage to the right arm, which becomes an important plot point. Because then we find out, again, because Kyle is just being dragged along for this madcap ride, which, again, I like this element of it. It's much more in the... in the vein of either, I guess, T2 probably, or maybe even T3, than it was Salvation, which was just sort of drudgery. They're really being carried along this little video game thing in this movie, in a way that I liked.
Well, even T1 in that movie was Sarah herself who, you know, was being dragged along without really knowing what was going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it works really well. So we end up, they're going to take this machine they had built, this time machine that they had built the mechanics of, but they needed the Terminator chip thing to make it work right. And so they're going to send them to 1997 to change the events that would lead to the stop the Skynet from taking over. But Kyle comes up with this crazy flashes in his mind and persuades Sarah to trust him and go instead to 2017. Which, yeah, that's pretty trusting. She's worked on this whole plan, and he just pops in and says, no, I had a dream that we should go do this other thing.
Yeah, but Pops says, hey, it's possible.
Yeah. So they the Guardian then sends them, because he can't go with, because he's got that melty hand now, and he doesn't have flesh over it. So he can't travel if there's exposed flesh. And they actually talk about it like, you know, like if you put metal in the microwave or tinfoil in the microwave, it's bad. It's pretty great. I mean, I like that part of it. How they explain these things in just one sentence.
I really wanted them to take a fluorescent bulb with them to see what happened.
Oh, I would have just turned the movie off.
See, I just want to know why, you know, because the Terminator flesh regenerates. Why couldn't they just waited for his flesh to regenerate?
Well, it took him 33 years to regenerate the flesh.
No, he said it would have taken several months, right?
But they have a time machine. Who cares? They're going to where they need to go. What's a couple months?
Well, by the way, later in the movie, actually, John Connor has one of, it's probably my favorite line in the whole movie.
Oh, yep. I love that one.
Yeah, where he's talking to Dyson, right? At the...
Danny Dyson, right?
Yes. He's like, you know, what do we want? Time travel. When do we want it?
It's irrelevant.
Yeah. Pretty great. Anyway, so... yeah, so they end up going to 2017, and now the Guardian has to spend 33 years preparing for their arrival.
He's privileged to spend 33 years. It's his job, and he loves it. Because he's Pops.
He is. So, 2017, Kyle and Sarah materialize in the middle of a highway. Which is pretty great. I mean, it was pretty fun.
So, clearly the time travel mechanism is good at putting you in a time, but not really a place.
Yeah, it seems kind of arbitrary, the place.
Yeah, how is it that they didn't end up in, like, Fiji or the Himalayas or...
Yeah, or underwater.
Yeah, or in a cement block.
Yes.
That's one thing I appreciated about the TV show was the place was the place.
Yeah. Yeah, so then we learn that this Genesis is like an operating system. So I thought that actually molded to our modern world in a nice way.
Yeah, it's iCloud.
Yes, it is. It's iCloud. And it's very popular, and everybody's excited about it. And everybody's all glued to their phones and their devices, which is absolutely true. When AT&T last week had their little problem where the AT&T phones in Anchorage and along the West Coast and in Houston, Texas, too, but definitely in Anchorage for well over an hour, AT&T cell phones could only call other AT&T cell phones, including they couldn't call 911.
Oops.
Yeah. That kind of posed a problem if you had AT&T.
Could they call the police non-emergency line?
No, they could only call other AT&T cell phones.
Well,
they could not call any terrestrial line at all.
Well, that's terrible.
Yeah, it didn't work out so well for them.
But we could text people who were not on the network and have them call 911 for us.
True. You could text...
thanks, AT&T.
Yeah, but you couldn't text 911 because we don't have that ability yet in our humble town. Although we will soon. People will be Snapchatting to the police department.
That sounds troublesome.
Yeah, imagine that, yeah.
What could possibly go wrong?
Although, you know, one thing we learned again from the Brussels attack recently was that in the event of a national crisis, you are much better off trying to send a text message or even like a Facebook message than you are trying to actually make a phone call, yeah. Although they had to send out alerts to people to stop streaming video because it was clogging up all the data, so it was making it very difficult for anybody to get anything.
I would imagine that what they need to do is engage a firewall technology that closes the ports for video streaming.
Freedom of speech, man. Net neutrality, well, man. I want to have my streaming porn at the same time as people are trying to reach their loved ones to find out if they died in the emergency. Not me personally, but, you know.
The royal me.
Yes. Anyway, okay. You know, when my stories just fall on deaf ears, it's they fall flat. Yeah, exactly. Jason just says, you're a crappy storyteller. You should kill yourself.
By the way, what I was implying in that was it was a depressing story. Not that it was a terrible story.
No, I know. It's like, fine then.
The most uplifting storyteller ever.
Yeah, okay.
And then they all died in a fiery wreck. Ta-da!
But what you said was
great story, man.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like, you tell the best stories, is what you said.
That's true.
In the most facetious way possible. It's like, so I got that one feeling I have hurt.
But I gave you a leaky boom, boom
boom down. Oh my God, yeah. Anyway. So, and I got to put Admiral Ackbar in there, which I thought was fun. sorry, so back to Genesis. Genesis is an operating system, and it's the operating system that's going to rule the world. It's going to unite everything. And again, it's a little bit like, I mean, it's, I thought that the idea of Skynet being an operating system was pretty clever. I thought it actually, because we're so, reliant on technology now. I mean, we are the people from WALL-E, right?
Oh, just about.
So we're just ripe for the plucking.
This movie did make me think that, sort of in the same way that cell phones ruin a lot of dramatic tension in stories now, because it makes communication so easy. Also, as technology evolves, Skynet seems like dumber and dumber as a concept. Like in the original Terminator, when it's just like, this concept, when you're 1984, that a computer system becomes sentient and takes over is pretty terrifying in the abstract. But like as technology advances and they try and like anthropomorphize Skynet more in each movie, I think it gets worse. Like, having Helena Bonham Carter sort of embody Skynet when she's talking to Marcus in Terminator Salvation was not as scary as some like abstract computer network. And then in this movie, when they further have Skynet embody like a physical being, first in that like sort of creepy kid, but then later as the Doctor Who guy, like Skynet as a dude is not nearly as interesting as Skynet as like this abstract force.
Well, of course, because when you give it a face, you're giving it a certain container boundary that it can't exceed necessarily, as opposed to just this nebulous Skynet, which your brain can ascribe all kinds of malevolent terribleness to.
Exactly. Yeah. So it robs you of your imagination to fill in all the gaps.
You're right. It really constricts the ability of it to be quite as dark and terrible.
Yeah. So I did think the concept of having Skynet be this operating system that was going to link everything, which would just, make it easier for it to take everything over, was a clever conceit. But then, when they put a face to it, I was not on board with that. It felt like a ripoff of Resident Evil.
Could have been Microsoft's artificial AI they had to shut down.
Oh, yeah. Well, tell that story, because that's fun.
Well, it's just an example of why, as humans, we can't have nice things. Microsoft put up an artificial intelligent daemon bot online, which basically just responds to other people.
It was a Twitter account, right?
Yeah. And so it learns, it's adaptive, it learns and responds based on other people's responses to it. And so it would say things, and it quickly escalated into saying things that were, oh, not popular, oh, and then racist, and then, oh, Hitler's the greatest.
Oh, yeah.
So Microsoft had to, we're perhaps not ready for this. But, as we discovered in the Bodie McBoatface, that the internet is always, the internet is not always run by adults.
Oh, but see, the Bodie McBoatface thing, and I don't know if have you heard about Bodie McBoatface, Drew?
No.
Okay, well, the United Kingdom government created has this new scientific ship, a vessel. And so they put it up to a vote on what to name this thing. Like, they wanted to name it, because traditionally you name a boat after you could have called it some sort of name of some famous scientist or something.
The USS Jonas Salk or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the HMS yeah, Jonas Salk.
Exactly. But instead, the winning, by a landslide, the winning vote was Bodie McBoatface. So they had to cancel, shut down the voting, and say, no, we're gonna change the rules and we'll be back to you momentarily. Which proves that pure democracy is something that's a little bit scary.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I think a similar thing happened with something on the space station which got named Stephen Colbert.
Yeah, there's been a couple of examples when they open stuff up to public voting and it just goes awry because people are idiots and people have senses of humor that, I don't know, are kind of short-sighted and juvenile.
Nerd.
Well, I can completely see, by the way, this actually goes straight to Donald Trump. I can see that there's a certain element of people that want somebody like Trump, you know, somebody who isn't bound by all these crazy rules, just to start messing with stuff just because they want to see it burn, you know, like hoping for the revolution because they just want to see like shit fall apart. Turns out that's not you know, when you're playing on the level of a presidential election, it seems very unwise.
Rife, perhaps, with a bounty of unanticipated consequences.
Yeah, or sadly, anticipated consequences that nobody believes will really happen. You know? What's the worst that could happen? Okay, so, sorry, back to Genesis. I don't believe Donald Trump is Skynet, just in case anybody wants to make that drawing that line straight through. Oh, by the way, that just keep going, tracing the palm thing. Yeah, that was cheesy. That was too much for me. That was my pops.
Fair enough.
Also, a little molestery.
A little bit.
Well, the whole ending with the 12-year-old Kyrie was too much.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Yeah, I didn't like the ending for another reason. By the way, I have not seen the post-credit sequence, but I know about it.
What?
I know.
I told you.
No, I know you told me late, though.
But...
So, back
24 hours.
Back to the plot.
What? 2 minutes.
Yeah, I know. Well, no, I know what it is.
You just pointed like a Lewis Black finger at Eric. It was very aggressive.
Anyway, with his operating system, whatever. And then all of a sudden, Kyle and Sarah get rescued by John Connor.
After they're arrested when they show up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. They're arrested in the middle of the highway.
On the freeway, yeah. Naked.
Yes.
Because that's where we get reintroduced to the older cop.
Yes, O'Brien. Which, by the way, I think there was some mention that when they were shooting it, they thought maybe he was going to be Silberman. But, he would have been a good Silberman.
For the first couple beats, as he was getting out of the car, I thought he was supposed to be Silverman.
Especially since he sees Arnold walk in the hospital with the flowers. I mean, it would, you know, really harken back to that first film.
Yeah.
But, no. But then we learn Kyle Reese comes in, and there's this whole hospital thing. And turns out, we find out pretty quickly that what purports to be John Connor is really a nanomachine hybrid that the T-5000 turned into the T-3000 John Connor that we see, that is full of like carbon filament nanomachines or whatever.
That is never said in the movie.
Probably not. So
in the movie, Skynet turned John Connor into a Terminator.
Yeah.
And sent him back in time to ensure that Skynet went online.
Yes. And we have some fun scenes with seeing the new capabilities of the John Connor Terminator, and a fun little scene with the MRI machine, which I thought was pretty great.
It was kind of like the particle accelerator.
Yeah, exactly. And let's see, how are we going to skip through this plot here? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, so John invites Sarah and Kyle to join him. I'm not sure exactly what he wants them to do in this situation.
Well, he wants them to mate.
Is that what he's asking them to do?
No, but he does.
Okay. because like most omnipotent machines, like the internet, it's 80% porn. So. Yeah, okay. So they refuse his kind offer to assimilate. And then they have this this battle where he gets incapacitated briefly by the MRI machine. And then
after he and Pops getting thrown through walls repeatedly.
Yes. And also there's a Pepsi Max machine that gets thrown around that sort of echoes the Pepsi machine in was it T2 or the first Terminator? It must be T2.
T2.
So there's that kind of fun stuff.
In the Galleria.
Yes. So the Guardian takes Kyle and Sarah to a safe house in southern Marin County, where they make final preparations to destroy Cyberdyne's Genesis mainframe before it comes online. The T-3000 pursues them to the Golden Gate Bridge.
And Pops's hand is still all effed up, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just killing birds left and right.
And exactly. Well, and Pops and Kyle have this father-son-in-law kind of relationship, which was kind of cheesy. I mean, that's kind of, you know, they're trying to, like, as they're loading the guns, you know, they're kind of having...
They're trying to one-up each other.
Yes.
And Arnold keeps stating that he is old but not obsolete.
Yes. And Kyle has got that smirky young man quality that we dislike in a John Connor.
So you better knock her up or there's going to be trouble.
Just weird. So this is the safe house in the World War II bunker or whatever, mm-hmm. where John just shows up and in pretty much one scene, Sarah grabs like a grenade launcher and destroys all of the cash that Pops had collected for 33 years.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought. I'm like, well, way to get rid of everything.
While Pops is building this sort of magnet brass knuckle.
Yes.
Because that will disrupt the nano machines when he punches John Connor in the face.
Yeah, as you do.
The royal you.
Yes. So we end up with Kyle and Sarah steal a school bus that luckily Sarah's got her school bus license, so she doesn't have any problem working that. And John Connor grabs a motorcycle because you have to have motorcycles. And it's all kind of a fun chase along the Golden Gate Bridge where there's the bus going on. And
well, John Connor has driven a motorcycle in every movie, right?
I believe so. Well, okay, except the first movie, right?
Well, he wasn't
in the first movie.
And I think the TV show, he did not, right?
I don't think so.
But, yeah, in every movie that John Connor appears in, he drives a motorcycle.
Although, I had a weird flash where I thought maybe Cameron was trying to get John to let her ride the motorcycle. Then I realized that was in Once. So.
We watch a lot of movies.
You watch a lot of movies. Okay, so. Yeah, so we have this Golden Gate Bridge bus scene. Sorry, did Once take out Brother Jay?
You win.
I really wanted you to bust out an Irish accent right there.
I can't. Yeah, they are magically delicious, though. Yeah, so we end up with this bus thing, and I thought it was pretty great, the bus crash on the Golden Gate Bridge with the bus flipping end over end.
Even though bus brakes don't work like that.
I rewound it a couple times. I still couldn't figure out why the bus flipped.
Yeah, I couldn't either. I'm like, it launched into the air. Like catapulted, like it was a mouse trap that flipped over.
Didn't make any sense.
But still, it was fun to watch.
Yes, it was. It was a great action scene.
And also the bridge is so frail under its own weight that the bus, in all its little tin can fragility, manages to destroy the bridge to the point where, you know, the cables inside of the bridge fall off.
That would be a pretty terrifying thing if cables in the Golden Gate Bridge started falling off. Because I have it on fairly good authority that shit would go bad if the cables failed.
Seems right.
Okay.
I did enjoy the bus hanging over the side, though. I mean, that's always an effective trope.
That was fine. I mean, again, and also I had a hard time believing that the Terminator holding on to Sarah, who's holding on to Kyle, wouldn't have just ripped Sarah's arms out of her sockets and whatever. But oh well.
He's constantly calibrating to make sure he's not lethal.
No, but she wouldn't have any control over that.
Yeah, she's got that big beefy guy hanging off her other arm.
Holding a duffel bag full of grenades and shit.
Well, I'm just hoping it's his good non-twitchy hand.
Oh, exactly, yeah. Otherwise, he crushed a bird and, yeah. Oops. you want to be back.
Bleh, bleh, bleh.
Okay, so... At least
I finally stopped doing that at work, and now it's going to be back. Thanks.
Haleki boom boom down. Yeah. Anyway, by the way, do you know what Haleki boom boom down means?
No.
It's basically, I'm going to knock you on your ass.
Oh, well, yeah. Good to know.
I'm so shocked of all of us that you became the snow expert.
No, I'm not the snow expert.
I think evidence speaks to the contrary.
I just get it.
You have been doing nothing but listening to and researching snow since we last spoke. It's amazing.
That's actually truer than I'm willing to admit.
But you didn't see the extra ending.
Well, that's, again, I got caught in the snowstorm.
Who doesn't watch through the credits? Oh, so disappointed.
Yeah, well, come on.
We're a movie podcast. Watch the credits.
I've only been burned 6 or 7 times by that.
At least fast forward through them so you make sure you don't miss something.
This is the first of 6 movies and 30 hours of TV that had anything after the credits. In my own defense, there was nothing to lead me to believe that the Hulk was going to punch Thor or vice versa.
The ghost I love you at the end of the TV show wasn't after the credits?
Was it?
I think it was.
Maybe it was, yeah. I don't know. I watched through the end of that, I suppose. Okay, so we end up from a... let's see. How do we get from the Golden Gate Bridge to the helicopters? Oh, no. They're all arrested. I'm sorry. They're all arrested on the bus because they get up off the bus and they've got SWAT teams around them and they determine that they're at a severe tactical disadvantage.
Right. He's like 11 rounds short of a good odds.
When I spoke of being on the platform a couple weeks ago, did I describe the harrowing experience I had when we departed in the helicopter?
No.
I don't believe so.
So I don't like helicopters to begin with because they move in weird ways, like backwards and sideways and hover in place. Yeah, it feels very unnatural. And the helipads on our platforms, they look really large when there's not a giant helicopter on them. But when you're inside a giant helicopter on the helipad, it seems really, really tiny. And what it felt like to me when we took off, and which was already a stressful situation, because I think I did describe that I got like a 2-minute warning to go catch the helicopter, and I had to get in my Mustang suit and everything. And so I was all rushed and stressed out to begin with and wasn't sure if I was going to make my flight home. You know, all that stuff was going through my head. So then I get in the helicopter, I'm all stressed out. And as it turns out, we were going to go to another platform before we went back to the dock. And I wasn't looking because I don't want to watch. But what it felt like was instead of like taking off, like going up, it felt like they just tipped us over the side of the heliport. And then sort of flew sideways off.
Kind of like down the side of the building in the movie.
Yeah. So I did not enjoy experiencing that again, watching this movie. Because in my mind, I was thinking, that didn't actually happen. It just felt like it did. And because I wasn't watching, I was disoriented.
And then you got to see this, and now you doubt.
Yeah. Well, yeah. yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting back on a helicopter here too.
So, yeah, so anyway, we have a little bit of fun banter kind of in the interrogation scenes where they're finally freed by O'Brien, played by the inimitable J.K. Simmons.
We also got to see an epic mugshot from Arnold.
Yes. There was a lot of that smiley Arnold that was pretty great.
Mm-hmm. And then it turns out one of the officers was a Terminator, right?
Yes.
The lady was John Connor, right?
Yes.
Oh, was that who it was? Mm-hmm. He was just impersonating the officer?
Yep.
Yep. So we end up with the scene where they J.K. Simmons grabs Kyle and Sarah, and they go and get in a helicopter on the rooftop. And then the T-3000 grabs a helicopter. John Connor grabs a helicopter. And we get the scene that we actually saw in the... Also, this is something I saw in the preview, where Arnold jumps out of one helicopter and is a Terminator missile.
He'll be back.
It was a good scene. I like the mm-hmm. little quip. It was fun. And we have the one helicopter crash, and then the other helicopter land at the Cyberdyne complex. And the countdown mechanism goes from 13 hours to 15 minutes.
Because Skynet is evolving.
Yes. Genesis is beginning to gain sentience. And the Guardian, Kyle, and Sarah are going to plant bombs in the factory while holding off the T-3000.
What can possibly go wrong?
Yeah. So they've got this whole battle thing. And so that the John Connor T-3000 defeats the Guardian. And Sarah and Kyle attack it. And they manage to escape while the Guardian traps the T-3000 in the magnetic field of the time machine. And then the Guardian gets thrown into the vat of mimetic polyalloy liquid just beneath the magnetic field. Which is yada-yadding a lot of action, but still, again, you know, it's worth seeing the action, but that's pretty much what happens.
Pops gets killed and his chip gets thrown into a liquid metal body. Yes.
But John also gets killed, and then they blow up the, Cyberdyne complex?
Yes.
And so they destroy Genesis once and for all. And then...
Billions of people are going to be pissed.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Oh, people won't be able to get money out of the ATMs. Economies will crash. Airlines will not fly. It will just going to be a shitstorm.
Well, no. It was just that this new system didn't integrate everything. Everything else that was existing still existed.
So you just have this like vaporware shell on your machine that you have to delete?
Because everything was still functioning in the city, just the Genesis screens throughout the city stopped working.
Ah.
Yeah. Everybody who'd been waiting for Genesis is going to be royally ticked off.
Yeah. So their Xbox update's never going to get patched.
Mm.
I pre-purchased it.
Exactly. I went in line. Yeah. They pre-sold 1 billion copies.
That'll teach you to do a Kickstarter.
We also skipped over the part where the cops brought 12-year-old Kyle Reese in to see grown-up Kyle Reese for some reason.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, this guy has your same fingerprints. Do you recognize him? No? Okay. Well, thanks for coming down.
Yeah, that's what we do. We bring in, yes, the 12-year-old to go see the bad guy.
Yeah.
It's not great policing in the movie sometimes. Yeah, so they blow the shit up. And the world, the Skynet does not develop, therefore everybody's saved. And they have this alternate timeline where they never have to do it, Kyle and Sarah. Although they probably will anyway. And they end up traveling to go visit young Kyle Reese, where old Kyle Reese tells young Kyle Reese just to keep an eye out for shit.
After a weird encounter between Sarah and 12-year-old Kyle Reese.
Yeah, which is weird.
It was a weird, awkward, uncomfortable scene.
Because in this timeline, Sarah is not Kyle Reese's... Well, no, Sarah was never Kyle Reese's mom. It's all very complicated. that's a more like Hotel New Hampshire kind of thing. So... Anyway, and then they tell me, Brother Jay advises me there's a post-credit sequence.
Oh, yes.
Well, Arnold shows back up, too.
Oh, yes. Arnold shows back up. And this is actually some sort of, like, homage to... Sorry, Jason just did the Pops laugh, or smile.
Grin.
This is very creepy. Yeah, so this is some sort of homage to Doctor Who, where he says he's been upgraded. Apparently there's a Doctor Who villain that turns people into cyborgs, and it's called Upgrade. Anyway, it doesn't
matter. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Never seen it.
No. That's, so what is the post-credit sequence?
It's a encapsulated and protected core of basically Genesis.
So the entire movie was for nothing? They accomplished nothing?
Well, there's a backup of Skynet sitting around in the rubble.
Judgment Day is inevitable. They just delayed it.
So hopefully they do it so John can get born. But he's going to be born late now because they skipped forward.
Yeah, and pretty soon it'll be teenage John Connor sending 80-year-old Kyle Reese to go back and have sex with mom at whatever age he determines is appropriate at this point.
Yeah, but what Sarah, Kyle, and Pops, they like literally drive off into the sunset.
Yes. So if this was the end of the end, if this was absolutely the last chapter, it would be fine, right? I mean... Obviously, it's fine by me because I'm done with this marathon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no, this is a perfectly
it was all right.
Plausible, I guess.
Yeah.
Ending to the series.
Way better ending than Terminator Salvation, which had the worst possible ending.
Yes.
Yeah, this movie had way more ambition than T3 or Terminator Salvation.
Yeah.
I mean, it tried a lot of stuff. It went big.
Well, also, I think a lot of it was half fulfilled in anticipation of leaving the threads open for the next two movies.
Yeah. Which theoretically is still going to happen.
Yeah.
Did you say when the rights go back to James Cameron?
2019, they go back, and Paramount has slated the next release of this will be 2017 and 2018.
So it'll be one of those filming concurrently movies, maybe?
I don't know. Because this project was originally really secretive to begin with. The project was actually Vista. It was codenamed Vista. And nobody was allowed to talk about it.
Well, yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting. But yeah, it'll at least be a year before we have to worry about Terminator movies anymore. But I appreciated the ride. I enjoyed the ride, even though it was kind of rocky in the middle. But I really enjoyed even just the fact that our mom and I got a chance to talk about Sarah Connor Chronicles because she hadn't seen it until just this last weekend and I hadn't talked to her about it yet. And we definitely had a nice lively discussion. We weren't arguing with each other, but a nice lively discussion about the end of the Sarah Connor Chronicles. And
what was her take on it?
Oh, she was pissed. I mean, because she knew it was the second season was the end, she was already kind of leery of it ending weirdly. But yeah, no, she didn't like the ending at all. And she was really done with the Monster of the Week episodes and the end of season two. She's like, advance the plot, damn it. Just advance the entire arc. Come on, people.
But I guess in January, sorry to interrupt, Paramount released that they have pulled the Terminator Genesis sequel off the calendar. In place of it will be the upcoming Baywatch movie.
Yeah, because I think Genesis replaced the Baywatch movie to begin with, right?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think the Baywatch movie has been on their calendar for a while. Like, when was the last time Baywatch was relevant in culture?
I couldn't tell you.
And are they going to reboot, or are they going to have like the Hoff?
Again, I've never seen Baywatch. I don't know anything about it, so I couldn't tell you anything about the movie either.
Do you want to hear the final 2001 link to...
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Ba-da-da!
This whole journey has led us to this very moment.
Terminator Genesis, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Thank you.
who starred in Conan the Barbarian with James Earl Jones. Who was in Doctor Strangelove, directed by Stanley Kubrick. Director of 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Banana! James Earl Jones is in Doctor Strangelove?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Have you never seen Doctor Strangelove?
Never.
Oh, it's great. It's a very young James Earl Jones.
I listen to your podcast, so I don't have to.
It's a great movie. You got to see it. It is a riot of a movie.
Nope, not going to do it.
Okay.
Make sure you watch it all through the end credits, though. Actually, I don't think there are end credits. It's one of the movies that has all the front-loaded credits because it was, 1960-something.
The front-loaded credits with the misspellings.
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's still a difficult one to explain to my girls when they watch Sleeping Beauty.
Oh, all the stuff's in the beginning.
Yeah,
they just can't get into the movie.
Well, they keep yelling at me that I started at the end.
Okay, so any more Terminator talk, or can we stick a fork in the Terminator for now?
I'm done with Terminator.
Okay.
Indeed.
I won't be back.
Well, I'll be back eventually. But I won't be back for most of these movies. I'd be back for T2 in a heartbeat, though.
Yeah.
And probably T1. And maybe if T3 was on, I'd probably watch it,
Yeah.
But, any housekeeping this week?
I got a bunch of stuff I wrote down, so.
Okay, well, go for it.
So, first of all, being that we're all from Alaska, growing up in Alaska, I read something because I'm on the, you grew up in Anchorage Facebook page. And I had never heard the term Spinard divorce before, so.
You mean like up to this day?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's legendary.
I know, but I was one of those things that made me laugh out loud when
Spinard divorce is murdering your spouse.
Yeah. So, anyway, that was just kind of a fun anecdote. So, did you watch the Weenie in the Butt clip I sent you?
No.
What?
I'm sorry.
I said you blinked on purpose.
So, Weenie in the Butt?
Yeah, I sent you a YouTube link.
Okay, I did not.
Did either of you watch it?
I didn't get a YouTube link.
Oh, wait.
I just got a random text that said Weenie in the Butt. I was like, all right, that one doesn't need a response.
Well, okay. So should we just talk about it next week, or is it appropriate to this particular thing?
Well, no, it had to do with, it was contextual to.
I can see Victor Garber. He's a little old, but I can see Victor Garber being Joel Edgerton.
Yeah, I guess the link must not have gone through when I pasted it, so I don't know. Anyway.
I enjoyed the text. It was great.
Okay,
well. I was convinced because I specifically posted it, so I don't know. Who knows?
So, what's next on the list?
So, Drew had mentioned that he had had a ghost experience, or was a ghost believer.
Yeah.
So what's your experience?
it's kind of a long story, but when I worked in Metlakatla on an island, we stayed at this old converted White Alice station. Are you familiar with the White Alice stations?
Yep.
So it's this creepy, creepy old building that had been, it was once a Cold War sort of data gathering site with like super top secret technology in it, and after it was decommissioned, it was converted to barracks. So half of it was like the local municipal light and power company, and then half of it was rented out to whoever whoever needed to use it. So when we would go down there to do jobs, we would stay there. So it was this old, big, sort of concrete structure with like offices down below and like dormitory style rooms on the second floor. And it was super creepy. And it was reported to be haunted. So the first time I went down there, I thought it was bullshit. But there was a lot of creepy stuff that went on in there. There are some folks that reported to have like very specific encounters where like appliances would turn themselves on. One dude said the vacuum cleaner in his room turned on randomly, and he couldn't get it to turn off. But what I experienced was there were a couple things. One that was not ghost related was I encountered the largest moth I had ever seen in my room, which was scary enough. It was like the king of all moths. And when I tried to kill it when it landed on my blinds in my room. And, you know, blinds in front of a window, so it's not like you can whack it super hard. But I did give it a whack, and it didn't even move. It just kind of looked at me like I was an asshole.
Arthur.
Yeah, so that was
it. It didn't even put out its cigar.
It did not. But when I first got there, I picked a room way down the hall, away from everybody else, because I'm antisocial and I wanted my privacy. And when I moved down there, everybody's like, oh, you don't want to go down there. But I was like, oh, whatever, fuck it. and then I thought people were just like screwing with me in the middle of the night, because I was by, so it was this long hallway with rooms, and there was the end I went on had a stairwell that went to the outside of the building, and the other end had a stairwell that went down into the offices. So I kept hearing somebody run up and down the stairwell while I was trying to sleep, and I was getting pissed because I thought like it was one of the other ladies who was like she was like in a very athletic kind of exercise freak, so I thought she was like just running the stairs at night to get exercise. So I actually went out to tell her that it's really noisy and I needed to sleep, and there was no one there. So that was a little creepy, but I still wasn't a believer. But when I went back, I did not pick a room at the end of the hallway. I picked a room where everybody else was. Safety in numbers. But there were lots of weird stuff that happened. I don't even remember all of it, but I would wake up like every morning at the same time. Like it was a weird time, like 4:07. I don't know what was happening, but I wake up every morning at 4:07, and I could hear voices in the hallway. Like I couldn't really, the walls were pretty thick, so I couldn't make out what they were saying, but it was like you could hear like a conversation through the walls. And then when I would poke my head out into the hallway, you know, of course nobody was there. But so stuff like that happened, and it was to the point where our client, the guy who sent us out there, was and he stayed out there a couple times. He worked for the FAA. He was so convinced that there was a ghostly presence there that he ended up doing a bunch of research and found that there was a commander from, well, it was a predecessor of the FAA, the CAA, had actually died in the building. And so he was convinced that that guy was still there, screwing with people who were staying there, trying to get real work done, by the way, which was pretty frustrating. So, yeah, after spending several summers out there, I'm certainly convinced that there was something supernatural in that building. And it's funny because I just came to accept it. And I mean, I really liked working out there. I mean, that was some of the most rewarding work I've done in my career. I learned a lot, so I have like really fond memories. And there were several years when we didn't have any funding to do work out there. And then we got funding again, so it was sort of like this new generation. You know, instead of being like a worker bee, I was now the project manager and had to form a whole new team. So I was really excited to take them out there because it's one of my favorite places to work. And so I took this young engineer out with me to do like a site walk, and she hadn't been out there before. And so I was a cheerleader for this job and telling her how awesome it was, and we were going to be staying in the White Alice, and it's great because it's so convenient. It's got a big garage where we can work in. We're going to be setting up a mobile laboratory. It was fantastic. Not realizing that without any experience, when we turned the corner to see like the creepiest building out in the middle of the woods that she's probably ever seen, I'm like, and this is where we're going to be living. That she pretty much just like freaked the fuck out. It was like, nope, we're going back to town. I was like, what? We can't. We're here. So I got to see it through somebody else's eyes again for the first time and just realized just how creepy. Because that was the other thing about the setting of this building. It was outside of town. It really was in the woods. You had to drive down this long road to get there, this long wooded road. And it just kind of opens up into this old, almost looks like it's this abandoned building.
Do you have a picture of this thing?
I probably do. I could probably dig one up. But, yeah. So, I enjoyed it, but it made me a believer.
Fascinating.
So, I know, there's nothing groundbreaking. It was just a bunch of little stuff that creeped me out, and yeah, it was probably the beginning of all my insomnia problems.
Also, Brother Jay, do you have a ghost story?
I do. Derek is Native American, and he has some very strange, I shouldn't say strange, just very contrary spiritual beliefs than what I'm accustomed to and what I grew up with in some ways. So his indoctrination is part Catholic and part Native American, so it's a kind of a melange of mythology. Growing up, stuff would scare me, but I never was a believer. I'm always a skeptic, because if I can't prove it, it doesn't exist. So I have a hard time with the abstract, and I want physical proof. I want evidence. I want something. So, you know, I always was of the attitude like, well, if there's a ghost, if they existed, then they should want to come to a skeptic, you know, and make their presence, because, you know, if they can convince a skeptic, then they're in, if they want to be known. So pretty much I've just kind of existed under this reality that, you know, they didn't exist, and it was just people's hyper reactivity or sensitivity or what have you. Derek and I were driving somewhere one day this was years and years and years ago. It was by the old house that we lived in, the really narrow shotgun house, which I think you visited, Eric, the shotgun house.
Yeah.
Yep. So, we turned a corner. I was driving. We turned a corner somewhere, and I almost ran over a woman in the street, slammed on the brakes, and like locked up my SUV, and we skidded almost off the side of the road. And of course I'm freaked out, because I think I'm almost just ran over this lady. And then we're looking, and there's nobody anywhere. There's no one. And Derek said, "So you saw her?" And I said, "Well, of course I saw her." He goes, "Yeah, no, she's a dead lady. She runs up and down the street all the time." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He goes, yeah, she's a ghost. She's a spirit. She just killed her on here a long time ago. She runs up and down the street all the time. I see her all the time. She's not alive. She just runs across the street to fuck with you.
He just said it like it was nothing?
Yeah. So I was like, oh, well, thanks for telling me. And I'm never driving this way ever again. So that was my one experience. But when you, I was listening to one of the podcasts, I think it was the week before last, when you talked about you were kind of a believer in it. It's just something I wrote down and I forgot to bring it up. So now I'm crossing it off my list.
Cool beans. So anything else on that list?
I have one final thing, which I posted on Facebook, but Drew hasn't seen because he's not a Facebooker. Drew may appreciate this or may not, but it was funny to me. At work, we have a wide swath of languages. And I have picked up some words in other languages, Spanish, Russian, some Nepali, a little bit of Chinese, very little, a little bit of Vietnamese, very little. Normally we have one of my coworkers speaks Ukraine/Russian, but she's been out for a couple weeks, and so I have actually learned enough Russian that I can muddle through with a little bit of discomfort and shame. And sometimes help with vocabulary from Google Translate. I can usually convey my point to the people who have Russian issues. I had a client come in Friday and was speaking Russian. And of course, I was the only one who could really get anywhere with him. So I started speaking Russian to him, my limited Russian vocabulary. And he looked at me and cocked his head and started speaking to me in German. And I understood him, which was amazing to me, but I understood him. And so he and I were kind of carrying on a quasi conversation. And as it turns out, he speaks Russian and German and a dialect of some Azerbaijan language. And he speaks some dialect of an Afghani language. And so he's been around that kind of area in Russia and the Soviet Union and some of those former Eastern Bloc countries. It was odd because I was then trying to interpret all the pharmacy stuff to him in German, and I realized how rusty my German was and how much Spanish I've learned, because like every third word I tried to get out in German was coming out in Spanish, because that's where my vocabulary is now. And of course, this guy didn't speak any Spanish, but he would laugh and he would say things to me in German and I could understand him fine, but my vocabulary was so rusty. So it took me aback a little bit. And one of my coworkers, my work wife, said, she goes, oh, I get it now. It makes sense. You speak Spanish and Russian with a German accent.
Of course you do.
Which is the most horrifying thing ever.
Well, I said, oh, so I just sound angry and upset all the time and spitty and guttural. But she said, I never could get your accent, but I could tell you had one. Now it makes perfect sense. You just speak Spanish and Russian like you're a German. Anyway, it was just my little ethnocentric little world. It never occurred to me I would have a accent when I spoke another language, let alone a German one. So I guess I never thought about it, that when people learn other languages in other countries, you know, there's probably Germans that learn Japanese, that the Japanese can tell they're German because they speak Japanese with a German accent and so on. It was one of those things that it just never in my little brain occurred to me. So.
Sweet. So Drew, any housekeeping?
I got a couple of things. For 3 weeks, I've been meaning to thank you for the book, the I Am Legend.
Oh, yeah, the graphic novel.
It looks very cool. I haven't read it yet, but it's next up in the queue for me. Amazing.
Have you read the Matheson novel?
I have not.
Oh. Have you seen the horrible movie?
Which one?
The Will Smith I Am Legend.
Well, I guess the answer is yes. I've seen it, and I don't think it's that horrible.
Okay. read the book and then you will see how horrible it is.
That one, that may be the only movie where I watched the alternate ending on the DVD and thought, that was way better. They should have done that.
The book was way, 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 way better.
It's just a different thing. The movie is a completely different thing.
The I Am Legend, the movie, is to the book the same way World War Z movie is to the book.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
And I thought World War Z was okay.
Except that it had nothing to do with the book.
No, it did not.
So that's my point. I Am Legend is a great book in its own right because the movie doesn't do it any justice. Also, the movie, as I just had a friend who read the book at my behest after having seen the movie, the book has a point for the title. The title has meaning. If you read the book, you will understand the title of the book.
Oh yeah,
and the movie and it's kind has of a, no such.
It's kind of a twist. It's the whole thing is kind of a
yeah.
There's a thing. Yeah. There's a turn that Shyamalan. Takes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I thought the graphic novel was a perfect way to experience it, because it's pretty. The artwork is pretty great. And it's a long graphic novel. It's like a couple hundred pages.
Oh, that's awesome.
It is thick.
Yeah, it's dense with text. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, because the text is worth it.
I look forward to it.
Yeah.
Also, have either of you seen Jurassic World?
Yes.
Nope.
What did you think about Jurassic World?
It was fine. It wasn't great. It didn't break any ground. It was a little goofy, and it was the Bryce Dallas Howard, person was, I mean, the character was not great, but it had enough touchstones with the original, you know, it had kids involved in it. I thought the pterodactyls were cool. It's about what I thought of it.
I thought it was perfectly enjoyable because it was... It had the exact same beats as the first movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like it was, you know, in a way that some people complained about The Force Awakens. But I don't recall people complaining about Jurassic World. I mean, it's essentially the same movie.
Well, you know, do you remember the scuttlebutt leading up to Jurassic World's opening?
No.
They predicted doom. They predicted that it was going to, like, fail and be, like, the first $500 million failure. And they totally underestimated how big an audience there would be.
It was the second biggest movie of the year, right? It was the biggest one until Star Wars opened?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was one of the biggest movies of all time. And they were expecting it to be, like, the end of that, like, possibly the end of the studio. So
I thought it was perfectly enjoyable. Wasn't anything great, but it was fun.
Yeah
The dinosaurs look great.
Yep, they did. I thought it was sort of silly, the dinosaur trainer guy, and it was weird seeing Vincent D'Onofrio with like super white teeth.
He was the best part of Daredevil, by the way.
Okay, I'll have to watch the Daredevil show.
He was great. Because you inspired me and Jennifer, since I last saw you, we have marathoned every episode of The People versus O.J. Simpson.
And what do you think? I haven't seen any of it. I've just heard really good things.
It is fantastic. And it sounds so stupid when you describe it out loud, but it is amazing. It is great.
I hear Travolta does a really good job.
Yeah, everybody in it is great. David Schwimmer does a good job. He even takes pot shots at the Kardashian celebrity culture.
Hey, he plays Robert Kardashian, right? Shots.
Yeah. He's got a whole speech to his children about fame. and the value of it. But no, it's great. It's really compelling. It brings back so many memories. And the whole time you're watching it, just thinking like, I know how it ends. How was this outcome even possible? And then you watch it and it's riveting and it's painful and it's uncomfortable. I highly recommend it.
Cool. It's on my list. Now, how long is this supposed to last? I mean, what's the...
It's either 10 or 11 episodes. I think there's only one more left after this week.
Okay, well, no spoilers.
So... yeah.
So,
Yeah, you should check it out.
I will, yeah. Looking forward
also,
to
it. Also, Better Call Saul remains very strong.
Excellent.
Yeah. Archer Season 6 is on Netflix.
Oh, trust me, I'm going to be watching one movie a week for a couple weeks.
Well, at least the next movie is pretty short.
Yeah. Oh, I think the next movie is fine, though. I'll pre-record like a 50-minute monologue about the next movie, I think. Maybe not. Maybe I won't be so angry about it.
Really? You think that's likely?
Nah, we'll see.
You're adept at just kind of letting that go?
No, we'll see. I mean, yeah, we'll see. So any more housekeeping, Drew?
No, that's all I have.
Okay. Well, I just have a couple little things. One is... Have I talked to you about the My Favorite Murder podcast? It's...
You mentioned it to me and Jennifer the other day.
Okay, well... It's one of my favorite podcasts now. It's called My Favorite Murder, and it is Karen Kilgariff and Georgia Hardstark, and they talk about, they're both like true crime buffs and like comedians, actors, whatever. And what's funny is they're really into the true crime thing, and they have a fairly encyclopedic knowledge just from seeing all the shows and reading all the books, except sometimes they get things quite wrong, which is sort of funny. But the show itself is great. I highly recommend listening to the show, My Favorite Murder. But I also recommend joining the closed Facebook group, My Favorite Murder Podcast. It's a closed group, so people feel, you know, because that way, if you post things within the group, people aren't in the group can't see them, which is important. Even if you try to share it, people who are not a member of the group can't see that what you're sharing. So... all these crazy murder junkies and true crime fans post a lot. And it's pretty respectful. The group is actually pretty, you know, pretty interesting. And one of the things that the podcast did was it said, you know, shout out to your hometown murder. So, you know, if you've got a murder that happened in your hometown, give us a little bit of that story. Well, so there's a lot of that. And there's also a lot of suggestions on other true crime podcasts. And I think I mentioned that, like, for instance, one of the podcasts that I haven't listened to, they talked about, hey, what's up with this podcaster? He sounds really weird now, so I can almost not listen to it. But maybe we need to be worried about him personally because he's, like, over-pronunciating things, and it's just really strange. So the level of, you know, the people that listen to stuff really listen. That's the thing about radio and podcasts that I like, is that it's an sort of an intimate medium because we really are coming in your ear holes. And so it's a very, you know, especially if people listen to it, usually kind of doing solo things, you know, they're either at work, like working by themselves, or they're at home, either getting ready to go to sleep or doing, you know, like menial tasks or whatever. So it's kind of that intimate thing. And if you listen to a podcast for long enough, you kind of get everybody's backstory and you start to, you know, you start to get like a familiarity, even becoming, you know, overly familiar with some podcast people. Because I know like Jimmy Pardo has mentioned how, you know, some like rabid fans will be, oh, hey, and then they'll say what they think is the catchphrase. But it's something Jimmy Pardo said like once 100 episodes ago and doesn't have any idea what context it was in, and yet has to be polite and nice to people about, you know, oh yeah, you know, unless we made a t-shirt about that, you're wearing it, I'm not going to even remember it was part of my show. But anyway, so the other thing they do on this Facebook group is they are recommending other podcasts about true crime. And so I'm going to recommend one called Sword and Scale. And it's really, really interesting. And there's like a 2-episode arc where he talks about this lady who believes that her daughter was murdered, even though her daughter probably committed suicide. And how you can't, like, if you post stuff to true crime forums, and there's like people, like kind of like in the Dark Places murder club, there are people that take like amateur investigation very seriously. And if you start putting together facts like, oh, I don't know, maybe the mom is crazy and inventing all these conspiracies, and what she's telling you about things that made her believe that her daughter was murdered were actually not in the real police reports. If you start questioning a crime victim's family, then A, you're kind of a pariah anyway. But B, suddenly there are people on the internet who will attack you personally and your business and put your address on the websites and, you know, contact your boss at your regular job. So it's very interesting. But it's really well put together. Sword and Scale. So I've been listening to lots of depressing podcasts. Anywho. We'll stick it and leave it at that happy note. Licky boom boom down.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.